Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey there, if you're listening to this and you support us on Patreon, you can hear it via the Patreon page ad-free.
One, two, tres, cuatro.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we'll be talking with author Sam Weller about why we love songs about ghosts. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, Jim and I have some ghostly tracks we need to share.
You know, Greg, we all know, anybody who's listened to this show for any length of time, that Halloween is your favorite holiday of the year. It's high on my list as well. We've done a lot of Halloween shows. We've run through all sorts of songs, most horrifying songs about monsters, songs about witches, I think we did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then I was thinking, you know, what are we going to do? Hey, we've never done ghosts.
I can't
ghosts,
believe ghosts we shorted ghosts all this time.
You know, I think of Charlie Brown putting the sheet over his head. I think of Casper, the friendly ghost. We've never done songs about ghosts. We're going to share a bunch of our picks for your Halloween playlist, and we've got Sam Weller adding some picks as well. But I'm going to start off with a classic Rocky Erickson track from back in 1981, The Evil One. The late, great Rocky Erickson of the 13th Floor Elevators and a fantastic solo career was, of course, obsessed with horror movies. Given his trepidatious state of mind, many people said he lived in a horror movie. You never doubted when he was singing with that fantastic voice that he was seeing the things he was talking about. And Rocky said it quite simply, a theme for this entire show. If you have ghosts, Mr. Kot, then you have everything. And he wanted to make it clear in this song. It's one of those great Rocky songs. There's only about 5 or 6 lines of lyric that repeat, and the melody drives the entire song. Wine never does that. So don't be telling me I'm too in my cups, and that's why I'm seeing ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
These ghosts are my friends. And if you have ghosts, you have everything. Rocky Erickson.
You have ghosts.
Rocky Erickson, if you have ghosts, then you have everything. I also love the John Wesley Harding cover of this on that Rocky tribute album.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And, you know, you're right about Rocky. He had a very interesting relationship, shall we say, with the afterworld, the
yes.
other world.
Yes.
You know, sometimes living in those places instead of in reality. And his music was all the more amazing because of it. Ian Curtis of Joy Division did not have a friendly relationship with ghosts. In fact, you know, you talk about a guy being haunted. He wrote many songs that dealt with mysteries of life and how he couldn't fathom how they were affecting him. He met it head on in the song called Dead Souls, which to me amazes me. It came out in 79 and was a B-side. In retrospect, I think it's one of Joy Division's greatest songs. Mm. It was recorded and released less than a year before Ian Curtis took his own life on the eve of a Joy Division American tour. Now, everybody likes to look back and parse Joy Division lyrics for Ian presaging his death.
Yeah.
And this song lends itself to that sort of scrutiny. Someone take these dreams away, that point me to another day, a duel of personalities that stretch all true realities. Here's a guy who's haunted by something in his life, and that chorus, they keep calling me. And, you know, you mentioned my love for Halloween. I have a little soundtrack going when the kids come up and, you know, try to scare the crap out of them while they're looking, hunting for candy.
Your front yard is like, you know, Halloween world.
Well, yeah, it's exactly. Pass by my house, you know which one it is. That's the Halloween house. Of course, our whole block does it up really well. But anyway, they keep calling me, and a haunting song by Joy Division and Ian Curtis from 1979 on Sound Effect. Ian Curtis, Haunted by Ghosts on Dead Souls, a B-side that stands up with the greatest works of Joy Division. Jim, what do you got next for us?
I'm going to the Psychedelic Furs, Greg. You know, I love this band, and we've only played them rarely. We should do an album dissection or something at some point. Mirror Moves, their 1984 release, is not my favorite. It's when they're really starting to get synth poppy, moving away from the European Sun Velvet Underground origin of the first couple of albums. But Richard Butler's voice is always fantastic, and this band had an unerring way with a hook. I'm going to play The Ghost in You. Our chat with Professor Sam Weller later, what do ghosts mean in literature and in lyric? Often it is something we are carrying inside of us, and nothing is heavier to carry than lost loves, past loves, loves that did not go right, falling over you. Angels fall like rain, and love is all of heaven away. The ghost in you, she don't fade. I can relate to that. Mm. I've got some ghosts in that manner. Psychedelic Furs, The Ghost in You. You love the Psychedelic Furs.
Yeah, I think their first album is their best.
That's it is fantastic. Yeah. I'd go with the first three being pretty
good.
They're
great. All pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to... I'm sticking in that same general area, Jim, 1977, a few years before the Psychedelic Furs, obviously, but one of the original punk bands, in fact, one of the bands that started using punk as one of their marketing slogans.
Proudly.
In a perverse way.
Yeah.
They embraced it. Not a traditional punk band by any stretch in that they were basically a Farfisa organ and a vocalist, and then a Farfisa became a synth, and then they started using crude drum machines. But it was a very stripped-down electronic sound, presaging post-punk and industrial and dance music of future generations with their early records, which were widely misunderstood. But I think truly amazing pieces of work that stand the test of time, to use a phrase that's been overused for many, many, in many instances, but in this case, very appropriate. They loved the whole idea of horror and the whole notion of those Ghost Rider Marvel comic book characters.
They embraced that.
So the Ghost Rider comic book issue titled Satan Suicide provided the name of the band, and the song Ghost Rider on their self-titled debut album from 1977 is one of their signature tracks. It was not a hit, so to speak, in its day, but it has since been covered by countless punk bands, embraced as one of the great songs from that era. Martin Rev and Alan Vega, man, what a combination. Alan Vega's vocals, you know, you never got a straight vocal from Alan Vega. He was either like this mumbly whisper that sounded like it was coming from another dimension to this just blood-curdling scream. So you talk about a soundtrack for Halloween. Suicide will provide one. Here they are with Ghost Rider on Sound Opinions.
America, America's killing its youth. He's screaming away. America, America is killing its youth.
Ghost Rider, Haunting Our Dream, Suicide is the name of the band on Sound Opinions.
You know, we have to have a discussion sometime, because I never appreciated Suicide.
Well, they were a terrifying band live, too.
Yeah, I saw them late in their career, and I'd heard that, and I just thought they were boring.
Yeah?
But it was they were on the way out already, you know, someday. Maybe that tainted me. Sticking with Ghost Riders, Greg, all right, you know, you're sitting, you're brainstorming, you're thinking, I got to come up with songs about ghosts. And obviously, Ghost Riders in the Sky is one of the most obvious and classic. I'm going to try not to be quite so obvious. Johnny Cash covered it in 1979 on the album Silver. Now, first of all, anything Johnny Cash sings sounds like Halloween. Johnny Cash, another
man. It's pretty dark, yeah.
I believe. Familiar with seeing ghosts in his life, you know, and I, you know, this is one of those songs that is right on the cusp between absurd and ridiculous and brilliant. You know, those opening lines, an old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way, when all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw. You know, Ghost Riders in the Sky. I love it. Red-eyed cows, right? It doesn't sound so frightening, but there's something about this song that is in a melodramatic Halloween-y way, especially sung by Johnny Cash.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd love this song forever, you know, but the Cash version is probably the definitive one.
Yeah, and it's still cheesy.
True, but you know, cheesy Johnny Cash. I mean, it's not a bad thing.
No, I know. We could debate some of the Rick Rubin, but this is long before that. Johnny Cash, Ghost Riders in the Sky.
A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky. For he saw the riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-yi-yo.
Yippee-yi-yo, Mr. Cott. Yippee-yi-yay.
I know. Cheesy or not, I still love that song. I don't know. Something about it gets to me. Speaking of Johnny Cash, he does a terrific version of the song I want to play next, as have many artists. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds did a terrific version of it. The Band, Joan Baez, Cherry Garcia, Mike Ness's Social Distortion. Hmm. Everybody's covered this song, it seems like. It's an iconic song, Long Black Veil. Originally a country ballad sung by Lefty Frizzell in 1959, it is a song told from the point of view of a man falsely accused of murder and executed for said murder. Mm. He had an alibi. He was with his best friend's wife that night, but he refused to mention that as an alibi because he knew that he would essentially destroy her life and his best friend's life. So rather than expose this sin, quote unquote, that he was committing, he took it to his grave.
Wow!
And he's singing from the grave. It's an unbelievably chilling song when you hear it, and I think the best version for my mind This is going to be kind of, it's going to upset some people, but this artist named Carolyn Herring did a version of Long Black Veil that has stuck with me ever since I heard it. She recorded it.
I have no idea who Carolyn Herring is.
And I'll tell you how I know about her. This is from her 2009 album, but a decade earlier, I'd seen her at South by Southwest.
Okay.
She just put her first album out, and she did a showcase at South by in the early 2000s, I believe. And I just thought it was incredible. And what I loved about it was the simplicity of the performance. It's very stripped down. She never oversang any of the lyrics. It was just straightforward. The beauty of that voice, the starkness of those lyrics and the arrangements just really haunted me. You talk about being haunted by a song. This is that song. Long Black Veil, Carolyn Herring, on Sound Opinions.
I had meant my life. I had been in the arms of my best friend's wife. Oh, she walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows.
Carolyn Herring with Long Black Veil. And if you want to hear that, the song in its entirety, check out our playlist at the soundopinions.org website.
All of our ghost songs.
All of our ghost songs. Yeah, not just this one, but I'm going to advocate for this one. Hear it and go for it. So tell us what your favorite ghost song is. Let us know in our Facebook group or on our Patreon community. Leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org, as well. Coming up, we're going to share more songs about ghosts and talk with author Sam Weller about what makes a good ghost story. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
Nobody treated him nice.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, Lemonade Shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
We're back, and now we're going to take a minute to talk about ghost songs and the meaning behind them.
All right, we are thrilled to have a guest here, Greg, to add some ghost songs of his own. And he is an expert, I would say, on ghost stories, scary stories, horror literature. My friend Sam Weller, we are both associate professors at Columbia College Chicago in the English and Creative Writing Department. Sam was Ray Bradbury's biographer.
Yeah.
Put together a couple of great Bradbury collections. Last year, in the midst of the plague, Dark Black, a collection of gothic short story, horror story, ghost stories, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We figured, who else are we going to turn to some insight into, because you're also a music fan.
Oh, big time, yeah.
So yeah. Philosophically, Professor, before we get into your ghost song picks, that intersection between scary music and scary literature or scary storytelling, scary movies, what are your thoughts about that?
Wow. You know, before we get, as you said, before we get into our songs that we're talking about today, both of the songs that I've selected have literary references within them. One is very obvious. The intersection to me is fabulous. You know, horror literature, ghost stories have often kind of been maligned as this subgenre, this pulpy arena for sort of cheap storytelling. But we're seeing today in the landscape of contemporary literature, writers all across the field, National Book Award nominated writers writing supernatural or ghost stories, or stories that are hybridic in nature with elements of the supernatural infused in them.
Many of them with musical connections. You're pals with Neil Gaiman, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's lots of crossroads between, I think, music and the supernatural. I think particularly in the genre that I kind of grew up on, rock and roll and punk, metal, hard rock, a lot of those people are horror fans. I mean, I think there's some synergy between
there
Eddie
is no
from
metal
Iron...
without horror.
Right. I mean, Eddie of Iron Maiden doesn't exist, right?
Without
horror.
Yeah, well, Black Sabbath, the first metal album, like a lot of people say, begins, you know, what is this that stands before
those
me?
Those pealing bells.
I can't understand.
Or Jimmy Page's obsession with the occult.
Yeah, sure.
Aleister Crowley.
Yeah. Aleister. Well, all right, so as Ray Bradbury's biographer, we'd be remiss. You got some Ray and music stories.
Oh, I have plenty of them, yeah. You know, so a lot of people don't realize one of the very famous Bradbury stories, Rocket Man, which was included in his 1951 short story collection, The Illustrated Man, was adapted by Bernie Taupin and Elton John.
They turned
that into the song Rocket Man. They were inspired, and it's really, they just very much transposed the short story about an intergalactic truck driver, basically, and the loneliness of that life and leaving a wife and children behind.
Yeah.
And they were so inspired by that short story from The Illustrated Man that they turned it into, you know, a number one hit. David Bowie was a big Bradbury fan, and there was an interesting encounter, which I find to be telling in so many ways. Ray's had four daughters, and his youngest was a tremendous Bowie fan in the early 70s and said, David Bowie's playing Los Angeles. Could you pull your celebrity card and get me backstage?
Dad.
He hated that. You know, he liked being recognized by fans. He loved signing books.
Yeah.
He didn't like the trappings of celebrity. And so he never pulled that card, you know, like, get me into a restaurant, I'm Ray Bradbury. That wasn't his style. And so when his youngest, the baby of the family, says, I want to go to see David Bowie, it's sold out, can you get us in? He called, got a hold of management, and they said, not only can we get you in, but Mr. Bowie would like to meet you, Mr. Bradbury.
Mm.
So they met and had dinner in L.A. the year eludes me. It's sometime in the early to mid-70s range.
You spent hours and hours and hours with Ray hanging out.
Yep.
Did he know who Bowie was?
He did because of his children.
Right,
you know,
just,
I think if we talk about his own musical leanings, they were much more swing, big band era.
Yeah. There was always an element of horror in Bradbury's science fiction, which isn't there for like Asimov or Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah, I think that I mean, Bradbury always told me that his true papa was Edgar Allan Poe. So I think that sense of the gothic and the horrific hails and comes from his love of Poe. He had a snarl to his storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
They were human stories.
Yeah.
They had heart, but yet they were vicious.
So you have chosen two ghost songs. Tell us about the first.
Yeah, and I figured, you know, as we talked about this, that this one might be a little obvious, and maybe you guys would have already selected Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush from 1978. How can we not gravitate towards the windy moors of the Midlands of England?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's almost like Conan Doyle and the Hound of the Baskervilles, right?
Yeah.
And what Kate Bush did, in my understanding of that, you know, is it's that her song is told from a different point of view than the book by Emily Bronte, the 1847 novel. It's a different point of view, and it's almost, it's a ghost story, right? And it's also a story of feminism and empowerment wrapped in sort of the ectoplasm of the supernatural.
I mean,
it's pretty dang cool.
Yeah, there's a, you know, that touch of gothic and then so much more to Kate Bush.
Yeah, and even the sort of lace-like fragility to her voice is almost wraith-like or banshee-like. You know what I mean?
No, she does sort of sound ghostly in a lot of that early material, especially that voice. The tone of her voice is so unique. And it is otherworldly. There's the only way to describe it. And like, people are really love it, or they loathe it. They just don't get it. But you know, if you're into Kate's world, and she creates a whole universe in that song, It's amazing. I mean, it's like the merger of progressive music, goth,
that,
you know,
Celtic Isles, that whole, you know, folk music
post
tradition.
Pre, you know, an iteration of feminism,
yeah,
that's like writ large at a time when it wasn't particularly, you know, chic. And yeah, she's amazing. And I think that song, it absolutely is one of her landmarks. I mean, you hit on that song right away, you know, as a choice. When did you first hear it, and what was your response?
You know, obviously, you know, I heard it when I was younger, but I think my first introduction to it, oddly enough, was Pat Benatar's cover of it.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, you know.
I'm coming home to Wuthering, 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 High Deep Cliff. It's me, I'm Kathy, I've come home, honey. So come home, let me in your window.
I think that probably was the first place I heard that song. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I grew up, of course, reading Bradbury and loving his gothic stories. I mean, I just love the accoutrements of the gothic genre, the haunted loneliness, the despair, the suspense, the sense of atmosphere is just massive. And then the ghosts. And so that, all of that. So I think I gravitated towards that song early on because of its gothic accoutrements.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, I've been married now for 21 years, and my wife loves Kate Bush. So when it's her, you know, when she's playing DJ in the house, she'll put Kate Bush on, and inevitably that song will come back on. And you never tire of it.
Yeah.
Lyrically, the instrumentation, the production. And you're right. I think there's a Tiny Tim quality to her vocal delivery on that that could be grating to some.
Yeah, right.
I absolutely think it's appropriate for that song.
It fits the subject matter for sure.
Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush. Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush. Just underscore, Professor. Who is the ghost?
The ghost is this forlorn, lovesick Kathy in the novel.
Mm.
And she is pining for Heathcliff at his window. and it's the ghost tapping upon the window.
I'm back in sophomore high school English class. This is so great.
Yeah.
All right, that was a fantastic pick. You've got another one. I would say there's probably no band Sam Weller loves more than the Wild Hearts.
That's the truth. I mean, I would say the Wild Hearts are, you know, in my top five. You know, I have only seen them once because they're from the UK and they don't tour here very often. They don't have a label here. I saw them at the Vic Theater in, I think, 2003, open for The Darkness. And I looked up in the balcony and who was up there but the one and only Greg Kot.
Oh.
And I'm down jostling in this sweaty pit, you know, for a vantage point of Ginger Wildheart. And there's Greg just kind of up in that lofty perch. And I was a bit envious of that.
Well, it's hard to take notes in the pit. I used to think it was elitist.
I tried a few times. It's not.
No, me too. The third time somebody spilled a beer on my notebook, I said, I'm going to sit in the press.
I lost contact lenses in the pit after that. You're kind of going, okay, I'm probably not the right place.
We were working, Sam. It was not. All right. So, but you're going to go deep. Ginger Wildheart is the legendary leader. He is to the Wild Hearts what Lemmy was to Motorhead.
Yes,
okay?
Very much so.
But you're not playing a Ginger song.
No, I'm not. You know, and so because of my Wild Heart fandom, I'm very into all the sordid and various spin-offs associated with the Wild Hearts. And they've, you know, like any great band that's been around for a long time, have many, many members in the family tree. Scott Sorry, who was the bass player for a U.S. punk band in the early 2000s, Amen, went on to play bass for the Wild Hearts between 2006 and 2009.
Mm.
And his music is much more kind of Mike Nessian, Johnny Cashian, punk rock, three chord, a little bit fused with a little bit of Americana, just a tinge.
Mm-hmm.
He's very influenced by Bob Mould and Sugar.
Okay.
Not so much of the metal patina that the Wild Hearts bring to their punk rock or that sort of big arena sound.
Yeah.
Scott is much more of a raw, anguished punk rocker. And we have corresponded over time, and he has a brand new song coming out this week that really embodies what it is that I love about ghost stories. And I love ghost stories that address the notion that you don't need a ghost to be haunted in a story. That we as human beings are all haunted by our addictions, by our faults, by our hatreds, by our flaws, by our failures. We're all haunted by something, by grief. And he was diagnosed 3 years ago with glioblastoma, which is a horrible cancer diagnosis. It's the same cancer that took Neil Peart's life from Rush. When you're given this diagnosis, it's a pretty grim diagnosis. And with young children, he said, and a wife, no, and changed his lifestyle completely. He had his brain surgery right around Christmas 3 years ago. He was told he wouldn't come out of it. He'd come out of it a vegetable. Came out completely coherent.
Wow.
Completely clear. A medical miracle. And 3 years on, he is cancer-free.
Still making music.
Still making music. And so this song is coming out as a 7-inch, and it really addresses his cancer diagnosis. And his sort of bottoming out of feeling haunted by the cancer diagnosis, his fear, his mortality, what is he going to do with his wife and kids, and coming to terms with all of it.
This is so heavy.
It is.
This is heavy. But it's Halloween. This is Black Dog Dancers by Scott Sari, formerly of the Wild Earth.
Black Dog Dancers from Scott Sori, ex of the Wild Hearts, a great band. Sam Weller, not ex of Columbia College. He's an associate professor there.
Not yet.
He's also an expert on ghost stories and horror literature. And, you know, the whole idea, I love the idea of a ghost as sort of a stand-in for the psychodrama in your head.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great way of thinking about it. And really, you, Professor, could probably address this better than I. Is that really what we're talking about when we're, you know, dealing with ghost stories? Is it just a substitute, a metaphor for what's happening in real life?
That, you know, the beauty of great art is it can be interpreted in multiple ways. So I think your question is profound, and that I think it can be looked at in both ways. There's the traditional ghost story, of course, that is about wraith-like creatures of the night and the windy moors and chains and bedsheets and all of the sort of cliches and tropes of the genre. But then there's also the deeper metaphorical representation of why we attract to ghost stories in the first place and how they're a window or a mirror to us, how they sort of represent our societal fears, our cultural fears, our personal fears and longings. And so they represent two things. I think we go to them because I think people generally are drawn to the unknown. They're drawn to a scary story. But I think your question gets at the much deeper underpinnings of the best ghost stories, as is the same with science fiction, are a representation not just of the beyond, but a representation of us in the present.
I don't read a lot of fiction. You know, I'm all about nonfiction, but I loved your collection, Dark Black. And you have, I think, a first in literary history. You have a horror story written in the form of like a music journalism feature.
Reflects our lives in some way. That's sort of a horror story.
We both read plenty of horrible music journalism, but this is not what Sam... Tell us about that story before we let you go.
I wrote that in the summer before the book came out. So that was one of the later stories I wrote in that collection. It's called Guided by Demons, which simply, obviously, is a play on the band Guided by Voices. And it's about a punk rock musician who writes an album with the ghost of a musical legend. You always hear that old sort of barroom game of, you know, what band in heaven would you think is the best band? Yeah, Elvis on vocals, John Bonham on drums.
Kurt Cobain on guitar. Yeah.
And I thought, well, what if a great artist or a fledgling artist had an opportunity to pen an album with the ghost of Johnny Cash or the ghost of fill in the blank? And from there, I thought, you know, I wrote for alternative weeklies for many years is kind of, that's where I learned how to write. And I can get into that voice of sort of that feature magazine voice very quickly because you write, you're on deadline all the time. And I thought, wow, what if I tried to play with narrative form here? And I didn't just write it as a linear first or third person short story. Mm-hmm. I wrote it in the guise of a feature magazine story. Mm. It's a story about a punk rock musician who writes an album with a ghost.
So there's hope for us, Cott. Yeah. We may be able to write out of our niche someday.
Well, yeah, like I said, we have a few horror stories that we could
tell. We have a lot of horror.
We wouldn't have to reach that far into your imagination.
Well, Dark Black is Professor Sam's book. And I feel so much more educated now having you on, Sam. Thanks for coming on Sound Opinions.
What a pleasure. Thanks for having me. And I think it's gonna be
a long, long time. Good picks from our friend Sam Weller. When we return, we will offer our final picks for songs about ghosts. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we are back. This week, it's been all songs about ghosts. In time for Halloween, I have a couple more picks. Greg, I know you do as well. Robin Hitchcock.
Yeah. I was wondering when we get to him.
Ghosts can be funny, you know, and Robin Hitchcock is wickedly funny. I remember seeing him perform this song originally when it came out, that tour that led to the live album, My Wife and My Dead Wife. I guess it's not so funny, but it has that surrealist Dadaist British humor. You know, my wife lies down in a chair. She peels a pear. I know she's there. She's making coffee for two, just me and you, but comes back with coffee for three. My wife is always here. My dead wife is always here, too. And Robin doesn't seem that bummed out about it. Yeah. I guess it's good to have company. Robin Hitchcock, My Wife and My Dead Wife.
My wife lies down on a chair and stares into air. I know she's there. I'm making coffee for two. Coffee for two. But I come back in with coffee for three. Coffee for three. My dead wife sits in a chair.
I love the conversation there with the ghost, Greg, when the ghost says, you know I don't take sugar in my coffee. It's all about coffee. Coffee with the wife and the dead wife. You know, in no other circumstance would I be laughing at a dead wife, but...
Yeah, there is sort of a, you know, a dark comedy element to it. So yeah. A lot of songs have that.
It's a funny song. It's a funny... What else you got?
I have a song by the Ravenettes, a Danish indie rock duo that has been going for a couple decades now, and I love this band. It's a co-ed duo. They say they were inspired by the Everly Brothers. Their harmonies were inspired by the Everly Brothers, which sounds kind of, you know, what, really? And at the same time, they're combining this harmonizing vocal style over, you know, electroshock guitars and these electronic elements underneath that. So you've got these driving, very dark songs, you know, topped by these vocals that were inspired by a 50s rock and roll duo. It's an interesting combination that has led to some fascinating albums. I always have found them entrancing, and they're also their love of gothic elements in their music really coming to the fore in a 2011 album called Raven in the Grave. You know, you can't get more gothic than that.
That's
title.
Like then, yeah, Raven's Grave. Yeah.
The song I'm going to play, Apparitions, we talked about this whole idea of ghosts. This is the first song I think we're going to play in our set here, where they're talking about the effects of war on a person. Mm. You know, the idea that you've killed somebody, maybe multiple people in a conflict, in a war, and you're haunted by these people that you don't even know, but you realize you've snuffed out their life, and they sort of take that perspective in the song. Obviously taking some artistic license here. I don't think either one of the members of the Ravenettes were actually in a war firing a gun at somebody. But I'm sure they've had experiences like that with friends or you know, just even reading the news, whatever. So here's an example of a soldier haunted by the lives he took in war. There's a part where the synths start to wash in that really gets me every time. We're going to play that little bit of the song for you as well. Here is the Ravenettes with Apparitions on Sound Opinions. Ravenettes with Apparitions on Sound Opinions. Jim, you've got another one for us, right?
I do, Greg. I almost felt guilty about going to the Mekons Ghosts of American Astronauts.
No, I don't feel guilty. It's a great song.
You know, we've played it on the show several times in 16 years. I don't know. You can go back and look for it in the archives. I remember once we did a live session with the Mekons, and I begged them. I said, hey, please. You know, and I was thinking about this song. If I had to choose, and if you had to choose, this would be a great show to do at some point. Like, the five greatest songs of all time, in your opinion, right? This is so far up there. Now, you are a bigger Mekons fan than me, but I just think this is a perfect song. Like, there's nothing I would change about it. Sally Timm's vocals are so ethereal. The idea that the moon landing is staged in a back lot in Houston, the way she says Houston, it kills me. It kills me, right? And Nixon sips a dry martini while he watches it. Why? It's a nice break from Vietnam, right? Opium for the masses, distract the public. Now, I know the Mekons, John Lankford and Sally, don't think the moon landing was staged, you know. But this notion of wag the dog, you know, mm-hmm. distracting people from something horrible with something else. And just the idea of, you know, there are many great ghost songs about lost astronauts, you know,
yeah,
Major Tom and just
Space Oddity,
floating yeah, right. in space and just
Rocket Man.
Yeah, yeah. Never coming back, you know, yeah. the ultimate graveyard full of ghosts. Anyway, a perfect song from 1988's So Good It Hurts, the Mekons, Ghosts of American Astronauts. Ghosts of American Astronauts, the Mekons. That's a good show. Perfect songs.
That's a perfect song. I would agree with you. I love that song as well. And I'm going to play a song in a similar kind of vein by a band that I love, Ladytron. You know, I've been sort of sticking with a lot of bands that come from an electronic background. You know, Suicide, Ravenettes, now Ladytron. And I was thinking about it. Why so many songs in this particular genre? I just think electronic instrumentation lends itself to like otherworldly sounds. Like it helps the backdrops, the haunted atmosphere.
Well, you know, I mean, theremins lead to analog synthesizers. Those are the soundtrack of every science fiction horror movie, yeah. you know. But it's also, true. You just don't know. There's ghosts in those machines. You know, I have three or four of them in the other room. You never, despite claiming you're a keyboard player, never play with my synthesizer. You know, you turn it on.
I thought it was off limits. I didn't realize I was able to just jump in there.
You can hop on my Moog anytime. You know, you turn it on, you turn a knob, you have no idea what you did, and all of a sudden there's the ghost of a giant elephant in the room. I love those machines.
Yes, speaking of the ghosts in the machine, there's a ghost in me, go the lyrics here, who wants to say I'm sorry doesn't mean I'm sorry. You know, it, kind of having it both ways. But the whole idea of living with regrets, we talked about this with Sam Weller, how those regrets can be the ghost in you, can mm-hmm. be the ghost inside your head. And this song definitely plays with that notion. Again, the electronics, the vocals, and the lyrics all go together very well. The name of the song is simply Ghosts, and I think it fits the subject matter very well. Ladytron on Sound Opinions. That's Ladytron with our 2008 song, Ghosts. Jim, you've got one more for us, right?
I do have one more song, Greg. You know, Professor Weller gave us a buried treasure pick of a song that is just coming out, and I've got one of those, too. I figure, you know, there's always great new music coming out. I'm going to go to those under-heralded Chicago garage rock heroes, the Gold Stars. They put out a special Halloween single. Long-running band in Chicago, lots of lineup changes, people come and go through the Gold Stars. Always a delightful garage rock party revolving around Matt Sal Faveza. Mm. And this new single, Stroll in Hell, he kept begging me, you know, give it a listen. Maybe it'll fit your Halloween show. And I said, well, are there any ghosts? And he said, well, the guy in the song is dead and he goes to hell. I was like, all right, that's a ghost, right? While he is in hell, he meets the whole cast of characters from the Universal Horror Pictures. Frankenstein, Frankenstein's Bride, The Mummy, Invisible Man, 50-Foot Woman. I think they were trying to do an update to The Monster Mash. Mm-hmm. The Monster Mash, of course, is a classic Halloween, right? But, you know, it's one of those songs, and there's so many of them at Christmas, too, that having heard it several thousand times, I never need to hear it again. But the idea of this 50s sock hop dance party happening in hell with all the universal monsters is, this is good. This should be the new Monster Mash. This is Chicago's Gold Stars with Stroll in Hell.
Uh-oh, guess the big guy sent me down here. Welcome, my own stranger. I have a plan. Let me down a creepy tunnel, fastening in my hand. Bunch of shaking and a twitching. Think you understand? Believe my eyes. It was a dance party, man. Woo! Even monsters do the stroll in hell.
Stroll in hell, Greg, with the ghosts. And every other monster you can name from the Gold Stars.
There's a pleasant sentiment. We're going to go deeper into the murk. Last song, I can't think of a better one than Black Sabbath's Black Sabbath. First song on their first self-titled album. Basically a mission statement for the band, an entire genre of heavy metal. And I think for this show in a lot of ways. Geezer Butler. The bassist in the band, he was the guy haunted by ghosts. He was the guy who was seeing, had these visions. He was the guy who was saying, you know, we can turn these horror movie scenes that we are playing in our heads and that we're seeing in the movie theaters and make rock songs about them. You know, it was a revelation back then. When you combine that with those double-tracked Ozzy vocals, and those titanic riffs from Tony Iommi and the bells, the funeral bells ringing.
Of hell, yeah.
You have got 6 minutes of sheer terror, which we're going to play just a snippet of.
See, I never thought of it as a ghost song until you chose it as one of you. But what is this that stands before me?
Well, there's
me?
A vision standing
there. An apparition.
It's the devil, but it's also a vision that, you know, apparently the story goes that Geezer woke up one night and saw this vision at the foot of his bed and wrote a song about it.
Yeah,
and
drugs would
holy
do that.
Mackerel. Yeah. What a song. Black Sabbath with Black Sabbath on Sound Opinions.
What is this that stands before me? Figure in black, which points at me.
Black Sabbath with the Black Sabbath track. It really, the roadmap for everything they would do is right there.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That wraps up our conversation about ghost songs. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have a favorite? Leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. Mr. Cott, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we have a conversation with Todd Haynes, the director of that new Velvet Underground documentary. And this week on our bonus podcast, we've got a conversation with the Go-Go's drummer Gina Schock about her new photography book.
Everybody's loving that Velvet Underground documentary. We're going to give our thoughts. And who doesn't love Gina Schock of the Go-Go's? For more Sound Opinions, listen to our podcast wherever you find such things. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors.
And speaking of sponsors, every week our show reaches hundreds of thousands of curious listeners from around the globe via podcast and on 150 public radio stations nationwide. If you'd like to learn more on how your business or organization can also reach this engaged and educated audience, you can email sponsor at soundopinions.org. That's sponsor at soundopinions.org.
Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo, and our intern, Mary Bernthal. Our social media consultant is Katie Cott.